You're listening to the For I Will Be With You podcast. For I Will Be With You. Daily reflections on recovery from the Bible.
Welcome back to For I Will Be With You. My name is Baruch, and I'm an alcoholic. I'll be your host for this sixth week of the year, from February 5th to February 11th. We're going to cover from Genesis 25:20 to Genesis 27:34. At the end of last week, we had the death of Abraham and the marriage of Isaac and Rebekah. Genesis 25:20 says, Isaac was 40 years old when he took Rebekah, daughter of Bethuel the Aramean, from Padan Aram, sister of Laban the Aramean, as a wife for himself. Why does the Torah repeat itself here, telling us again that Rebekah was the sister of Laban and that Laban was an Aramean? We already know this. And there's a general principle that the Bible, the Torah, never repeats itself unnecessarily or uses words unnecessarily, that every word is there for a reason. So if we don't understand why something is repeated, we should look into it. It's kind of like an invitation to interpret what's going on. So the Bible is emphasizing the fact that Rebekah was the sister of Laban, who was an Aramean, to make a point. And one way to look at it is that it's a comparison, it's a contrast. Rebekah was one of the most righteous people who ever lived. Yet she came from a family of idolaters and swindlers. So this is a pretty profound contrast. Not only did she grow up to be different from her family, she grew up to be the opposite kind of character by many, many orders of magnitude. She went very, very far in the opposite direction to be one of the great righteous people. So in recovery, this can be an inspiration. The story of Rebekah can be an inspiration for us. Many of us come from less than perfect family backgrounds, and we may find as we do the steps that our families of origin played a role in shaping our addictive selves. This comes up in the fourth step, where we, many fourth steps, look at families of origin as, you know, triggers of problems and bad behaviors. And we also have to look at our own role in it, and sometimes our role in the problematic behaviors related to our role in the family. These things connect. Yet, we're all God's children, too. And like Rebekah, we can develop a healthy distance from whatever bad influences were present in our upbringing. As Isaac and Rebekah's marriage went on, they were trying to have a child, but they were not able to for many years. And Genesis 25:21 notes this and says, Isaac entreated God opposite his wife because she was barren. God allowed himself to be entreated by him and his wife. Rebekah conceived. The sages comment that Isaac was 60 years old when Rebekah gave birth. Since he got married at 40, this is known from interpretations of the text, that we can deduce that Rebekah was barren for 20 years. So we should have a lot of compassion for Rebekah. So on the one hand, she was told she was going to be the mother of a great nation. Rebekah was told, you're going to be the mother of the Israelites and the Judeo-Christian peoples. This is a huge, you know, honor that she's worthy of. But then it doesn't happen for 20 years. So this would happen, then it didn't happen despite a lot of very fervent prayer on her part. So It's a testament to her supremely high level of righteousness and spiritual development that Rebecca never despaired of fulfilling her purpose in life. We can derive inspiration and recovery from this fact alone. However, in addition, we can also learn that a valuable lesson in recovery from Rebecca and Isaac's devotion to prayer to accomplish a goal that was set out for them. It wasn't enough that they were told, you're going to have children and they're going to become a great nation. They still prayed for it. They never stopped praying for 20 years to get the child that they knew prophetically was meant for them. They never wavered. There's a great concept here for recovery, namely that prayers are never wasted, and that the answers to our prayers may not come instantly. This is a very important point, especially for people early in recovery. I personally believe that prayer is important in recovery and that prayers are answered, although sometimes the answer is no. That's a concept that people need to grasp sometimes. But we pray for things in recovery like serenity and sobriety, and sometimes the answer doesn't come immediately, or it may not be immediately recognizable. Sometimes we don't see things that are happening that are the answers to our prayers. There's not always a big, bolt of lightning from heaven. But we should have faith that our prayers will be answered, and we should never abandon our prayers in the same way that Isaac and Rebecca entreated God to have a child. Now, fast forward a number of years. Isaac and Rebecca do have children. They have twins, famous twins named Jacob and Esau. Esau is older than Jacob by, a couple of minutes. He's the older brother, though. And that's very significant in biblical terms, because the older brother is automatically entitled to the inheritance. And in this case, the inheritance is the land of Israel and the right to be the leader of the Israelite people. It's a big inheritance, and Esau, it's his. And you have this comment in the Torah in Genesis 25:28 that says, Isaac loved Esau, for game was in his mouth. So what does this mean? What the Bible is saying, the context of this, is that it compares Jacob and Esau. Esau was described as a hunter. He was a great hunter. He was a man of the outdoors, physically fit, like a great warrior, a hunter. Jacob, in comparison, is called, in Hebrew, is called an ish tam, a sort of like a tame person, a tame man who dwelt in tents, who learned Torah all day long. He was a quiet person, a person of spiritual depth. These two men were really quite opposite in terms of personality and character. But like everything else, there's complexity to it, like life itself. And many things in the Bible are not as simple as they seem on the surface. Esau is a complex character, and he can be helpful to us in getting a perspective on how the role we play in our families can affect our recovery. Because Esau is described in many ways as being evil, a very bad person, that he's a liar and a crook and a killer. Yet, despite all these bad qualities, he risks his life hunting game so that he can feed his father the food that he loves. See, this is interesting. Esau is very devoted to his father. Hunting is not a safe activity, especially in those days. So, despite all of his bad points, Esau is still a good son, or at least he tries to be. Now, the question is he or isn't he? Some commentators say that he was really just pretending. He was, faking or, going to great lengths to show how devoted he was to his father as a way to trick his father into believing that he respected him. So, which is it? It's a contradictory point of view. Is Esau a man who respects his father for real, or is he just going through the motions of respecting his father so that his father will, think highly of him? And, that's the story of many of us, I think. Are we being sincere with our families? Are we posing? you know, just to look a certain way? Have we been labeled the bad one or the good one? I mean, boy, there's so many stories like that in the rooms. You know, the person who either was called the bad son and never lived it down, or the person who was called the good son and never lived up to it. I mean, that's probably a pretty big chunk of people in recovery right there. And Esau is kind of a role model for complicated sibling and filial dynamics. So it may help us to focus on the fact that Esau never stopped trying to honor his father. So maybe we should emulate him. Let's at least try it. Maybe Esau could be an example of fake it till you make it. He's gonna try to honor his father, even if he doesn't initially mean it, but then he's going to come through. Genesis 25:29-30 has another famous moment in the Bible, which is the sale of the birthright. So as we've said just now, Esau had the birthright. He, by birth order, he was entitled to be the leader of the Jewish people, and that would be that position would be confirmed to him through a blessing that Isaac would bestow on him. By Isaac would bestow the blessing on Esau. Esau would then inherit the mantle of leadership of the Israelite nation and the land of Israel, and from that would be the progenitor of the Israelite people and the Judeo-Christian tradition. Okay, so a pretty big blessing. So it says here, Jacob simmered a stew, and Esau came in from the field, and he was exhausted. Esau said to Jacob, "Pour into me now some of that very red stuff, for I am exhausted." And what's happening here is this famous moment where Esau decides to sell his birthright for a bowl of stew. He says to Jacob, basically, "I'm so tired, I'm so hungry, I think I'm going to die. The blessing doesn't mean anything to me if I'm dead, so I'll sell it to you if you give me a bowl of that stew." This is what's happening. Jacob sells Esau his birthright for a bowl of stew. So, here's the question. Does this sound familiar to you or not? I think it should. I think that if you've been through alcoholism or addiction, you've probably done something pretty much like this, selling your future for a bowl of stew, so to speak. I think a lot of us have been here. It looks like ignoring children to place bets, missing family events to get drunk and use, ruining businesses and educational opportunities in order to pursue self-seeking and whatever your latest high is. Yes, as addicts, we frequently sold out our own futures in small or large pieces for the equivalent of a bowl of stew. Now, you may think that Esau's situation was different. He sold his right to be the leader of the Israeli people. It's not the same. He sold something big. But it is the same, because we don't know what our purpose is in life. We don't know what our role is meant to be in the world and in the lives of other peoples. We don't know what our children and our children's children are going to do in the world, whether we actually have children or whether it's people we influence or things that we do. We don't know what the consequences of our actions are going to be. And if we sell out the right to do those things, we've missed out. And we've really missed out on a right to serve God. And this is the mistake that Esau made. He just abandoned his future on a larger, more dramatic scale than we do. So in recovery, we should focus our attention on making sure that we make the most and not the least of every opportunity that God gives us to help ourselves and build a better future. So years go by, and one thing that's worth noting, sometimes in the telling of these stories, people imagine that Jacob and Esau were quite young. The theory is that Jacob and Esau were in their teens when this incident with the stew happened, and the Bible often has very long gaps of time that are skipped over, and so the next thing you know, in Genesis 27:22, is Isaac is old and believes he's going to die soon, so he summons Esau and says, it's time for me to give you your blessing, meaning the big blessing, to make you the leader of the Israelite people and you get your inheritance. Isaac doesn't know that Esau sold this to Jacob for a bowl of stew. But this is many years later. He's now in his, I'm not exactly sure how old he's supposed to be, but he's a mature man at this point. He's not a kid anymore. Now, what happens is there's this famous ruse that happens. Rebecca, the mother, has received a prophecy very early on when the children were in utero that God told her that there are two nations inside of her, two sons, each would lead a nation, and that the elder would serve the younger. So you have to imagine, this is kind of interesting family dynamic. Rebecca is sitting on this prophecy that either she told her husband and he doesn't believe her, or he doesn't know, it's not clear, but she has an opposite understanding of what is supposed to be happening in the world. Isaac is looking to Esau to be the next, to be his successor in the world, and Rebecca believes that Esau is meant to serve Jacob, and that Jacob is meant to be the next leader of the Israelite people. So when Isaac sends Esau out, he says to get me some food to eat that I like, go hunt some game that you like, that I like to eat, and I'll give you the blessing. Rebecca overhears this, so she stages this trick. She puts Esau's clothes on Jacob so that Isaac, who's blind, will feel the clothing, and she puts goat skin on his hairless arms so that Jacob will feel hairy, like his brother Esau was supposed to be very hairy, and Isaac will be fooled into thinking that he's with Esau, and will deliver the blessing to Jacob instead. So we have this moment, and I think I, like so many people who read this, are thinking, this is never going to work. I mean, Esau was this big, hairy man, and Jacob was this hairless, quiet little guy. How is Isaac going to be tricked into, even he's blind, you'd think he could be able to tell the difference. And in fact, this is what the Bible says. Isaac is confused. So Jacob drew close to Isaac, his father, who felt him, he feels him, and says, the voice is Jacob's voice, but the hands are Esau's hands. So Isaac is fooled enough to give Jacob the blessing meant for Isaac. And this is a great moment from recovery point of view, because it gives us this line, and this is a many sermons have been given on this line. It says that you have the voice of Jacob and the hands of Esau. And this is we can look at ourselves with this this contrast. What are the voice means, the voice refers to what we say. What are we talking about? But our hands are what we do. Our hands are our actions. So, in our lives and in our recovery, are we speaking with the voice of Jacob? Like, we talk a good game, we say all the right things, but what are our hands actually doing? That this idea of someone with the voice of Jacob and the hands of Esau is a person who's maybe a hypocrite or inconsistent. Are you saying that you want to do good things in life, but what are you doing? What are your hands actually doing? We should ask ourselves if we're acting the same way. Do we say we're going to do the commandments and help others in the program, but then with our hands do nothing? Or do we take positive actions with our hands despite what we do or don't say? In recovery, we should try to act as we say we act, rather than speaking with the good voice of Jacob while we do evil with the hands of Esau. Now, Isaac blesses Jacob and he gives him the blessing of inheritance, of leadership of the Israelite people. A few minutes later, Esau comes in with the food that he's hunted and prepared, and Isaac says to him, in Genesis 27:32, Isaac, his father, said to him, meaning Esau, "Who are you? You know, weren't you just here?" So, the question is it really possible that Isaac didn't know what was going on? The sages have different opinions on this. Whether it was possible for Jacob to fool his father into thinking he was actually Esau. Some say that Isaac knew what was going on, and that he let himself be duped in order to bestow the blessing on Jacob, meaning that that Isaac knew that even though Esau was the oldest son and entitled to the blessing, that Isaac knew that Esau wasn't up to that job, and that Jacob was, and that he therefore had to give. He allowed himself to get tricked into giving the blessing to Jacob, the son whom he thought was really suitable for this role. Another point of view is that Isaac had his own distinct view of what was meant to be happening. That Isaac thought that Jacob and Esau were supposed to lead the Israelite nation together, okay, each playing a different role, that Esau would provide the money and the material wealth and the army and all the sort of physical things you need to have a nation, and Jacob would provide the spirituality and the learning, the biblical Torah learning, to make Israel fulfill its destiny as God's chosen people. So that's why Isaac blesses Jacob. He thinks he's one way to look at it Isaac thinks he's talking to Esau, so he gives the blessing for Esau, saying in another verse, "May God give you the dew of the heavens and the fatness of the earth and abundant grain and wine." He's telling Esau, "May God bless you and make you rich." Okay? Isaac wants Esau to prosper so he can support Jacob in Torah learning. However, it was not meant to be, as we know. And in recovery, the lesson to take from this is that God has a will for us, and we don't know what it is. Sometimes we may think we know, and we might be right, but we can never be certain. And even Isaac, who was one of the great prophets, Isaac had immense powers of prophecy and understanding of God's will at a level that we can never understand. He got it wrong, basically, or he misunderstood. It certainly wasn't clear that he knew what was going on, despite his gifts. And so, for us then, it should be even more the case that we should be humble about our understanding of God's will for us. In Genesis 27:34, in the next moment, says, "When Esau heard his father's words, he cried out, an exceedingly great and bitter cry, and said to his father, 'Bless me too, father.'" So he's saying, wait a minute, I thought I was supposed to get the blessing. Now, most people reading this are like, wait a minute, Esau, you know that you sold this right, so why are you complaining now? It should be confusing to us. Why is he so bitter and upset that Jacob took something that Esau already sold to him? But boy, this should sound familiar to us. You know, if you've been through alcoholism or been close to someone who is an addict, this behavior should be recognizable. He said he didn't care for his father's blessing, but when he was deprived of it, he was angry and resentful, and he hated his brother for years afterwards. So what's happening? How could this happen like this? Esau, like an addict, is so consumed by his drives of self-seeking that he acts carelessly with something which is a great value to him. Yet, when he realizes what he's done, he's traumatized by remorse, which expresses itself as rage and hatred. This is the story that you hear in the rooms. People mistreat things that have been given to them that are special, and then they feel guilty about it, or they resent other people who were involved in this instead of owning up to themselves. So many addicts have their own version of the "bless me too, father" kind of story, though maybe not so grand or dramatic. So the work we have to do in recovery is to make amends to the people who have make amends to people we've hurt with acting out, and accept our own role in it. This is the fourth and fifth step in creating the scenarios where we want to cry for the blessing that we once renounced.
You've been listening to the "For I Will Be With You" podcast. Daily Reflections on Recovery from the Bible. www.foriwillbewithyou.com